All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we're taking a look at a pretty significant case in employment discrimination law.
Yeah, definitely.
It's the 1978 decision of Chapman v. Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Co.
Oh, a classic.
A classic.
Yeah.
So for our deep dive today, we've got a few resources to kind of guide our conversation.
Okay.
We've got some advice specifically geared towards law students on how to kind of break down these cases and understand them.
Yeah, always helpful.
We have a really detailed case brief that goes step by step through the whole thing. And of course, we've got the legal brief itself.
Of course, the source material.
Right. So our goal today is to really kind of cut through all the complexities you might find in a case like this and try to pull out those really central understandings, those core takeaways.
Absolutely.
Especially, you know, when we're thinking about the Equal Pay Act, Title VII, those big kind of landmark pieces of legislation.
Right.
And, you know, what makes this case from 1978 still relevant for us today?
Still so relevant. I think this case, even though it's from so long ago, it really gives us this clear picture of some of these core ideas in employment law that, you know, we still grapple with today.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, a group of plaintiffs in this case. We had 8 female plaintiffs.
Okay.
Including Judy Chapman and Joan Cochran.
Okay.
And along with them, we had one black male plaintiff, Reuben Grundy.
Okay. So a mix of folks bringing suit here.
Exactly. And all of them are bringing a lawsuit against Pacific Telephone.
Okay.
And, you know, they're bringing claims under, like you mentioned, a few different areas. We had sex and race discrimination under Title VII.
Okay.
Wage discrimination under the Equal Pay Act.
Okay.
And race discrimination under Section 1981.
Got it. So kind of hitting on multiple areas of law here.
Multiple areas of law. And I think it's also worth noting right up front that the trial was structured in two phases.
Interesting.
The first was figuring out if discrimination actually happened.
Oh.
And the second, if it did, you know, what would the remedies be?
Okay. So two distinct phases there. So when the court looked at all of this, what were the actual, like, legal questions they were trying to answer?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just a general accusation. Uh-huh. We had to get into the specifics. So the first big question was, did Pacific Telephone violate the Equal Pay Act?
Yep.
And did they do so by paying women less than men for jobs that were basically, you know, substantially equal?
Substantially equal. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a term we hear a lot in these cases.
Exactly. Exactly. The second big question was, did the company have discriminatory practices when it came to promotions in violation of Title VII?
Okay.
And then the third one was, did they racially discriminate against Reuben Grundy, this time in violation of Section 1981?
Got it. And you mentioned earlier, as we're kind of going through all this, it's important to keep in mind, only two of the plaintiffs actually were successful.
Huh? Exactly. Yeah. Two of the original plaintiffs, Chapman and Cochran, they were the ones who actually won their claims.
Okay. So we should be looking for what made their cases different as we go through this.
Absolutely. So let's start with that Equal Pay Act claim.
Okay. Yeah, let's dive into that one. So in this case, the court ultimately decided in favor of Pacific Telephone.
They did.
So what was the reasoning behind that? What's the big takeaway for us there?
The court basically sided with Pacific. And I think the key takeaway, the key insight here for everyone is that it's all about the actual work being done,
okay,
not just the job titles.
Okay. That's a distinction we see a lot in these types of cases.
All the time, yeah. So the female employees in question here, they were telephone sales supervisors.
Okay.
We often shorten that to TSS.
TSS.
Yeah, and they were comparing their roles to those of the male premise managers.
Okay.
Or PMs.
PMs. All right, I'm following along with the acronyms.
Perfect. So their argument was that these two jobs, TSS and PM, were basically substantially equal. You know, they should be paid the same. But the court really dug deep, and they identified some pretty big differences in what these roles actually involved.
Okay, so there was more to it than just the title.
Way more to it. The male premise managers, they had to travel a lot for work.
Okay.
They were managing these accounts that were worth a lot more financially.
Okay, so more at stake.
Higher stakes, yeah. And they just had a bigger level of financial responsibility overall.
So even though, you know, at a glance, you might say, oh, they're both managing things. They both have supervisory roles.
Right. They sound similar.
The court said, no, no, no. We got to look deeper.
Exactly.
It wasn't enough to make them substantially equal.
Not at all. And this is where I think one of the key quotes from the case comes in.
Okay. Let's hear it.
The court said, actual job content, not job titles, is controlling.
Okay.
really lays the groundwork for how we understand equal pay.
Yeah, it's not enough to just look at the name.
Exactly.
You got to look at the day-to-day. What are they actually doing?
Exactly. So because the premise manager role involved more travel, you know, handling these bigger accounts, carrying that greater financial accountability.
Right.
The court decided, nope, these are not substantially equal to the telephone sales supervisor roles.
Okay, so a really important distinction there. Now, let's switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
Let's move to the Title VII promotion claims.
Okay, yeah, let's get into those.
So we know Judy Chapman and Joan Cochran, they were successful.
They were.
But other female plaintiffs weren't.
Right.
So what made those two cases stand out? You know, what can we learn about proving this type of discrimination from their success?
I think what's really interesting and revealing in Chapman and Cochran's cases is the specific evidence they presented.
Okay.
The court found that they had really clearly demonstrated without a doubt that they were qualified for promotions.
Okay, so they had the qualifications.
They had the qualifications, and these were promotions to second level management positions.
Okay.
Despite this, they were repeatedly passed over for male candidates who in some cases seemed to have fewer qualifications.
So less qualified men were getting promoted over them.
Yeah, and I think what was really critical here, the real nail in the coffin for Pacific Telephone, is they didn't give any legitimate non-discriminatory reasons for these decisions.
So they couldn't explain it away.
Basically, yeah.
You know?
They didn't have a good reason for not promoting Chapman and Cochran.
Interesting. So for the other women who didn't win their Title VII claims, was it like a lack of this specific evidence?
I think so. It seems like for them, it was more about a general feeling of being overlooked.
Okay.
Rather than being able to point to these specific instances.
So it's not enough to just feel like there's a pattern.
No, you've got to have the specifics. Each individual needs to show that they were qualified for a specific promotion, that they were denied that specific promotion, and that the reason for that denial was either not true or was a cover-up for discrimination.
Oh, okay. So it really has to be tied to those concrete instances.
Yeah. And this is where, again, those dates become really important.
Yeah.
The court even noted the specific dates of these discriminatory denials.
Okay.
Starting February 1st, 1974 for Chapman.
Okay.
And July 1st, 1974 for Cochran.
So they had the evidence to back it up.
They did.
Okay. So this really highlights that employers can't just rely on some vague idea of, oh, well, this person's a better fit.
Right. Or just gut feelings.
Or, you know, this is how we've always done it. Those kind of outdated ideas.
Exactly. Those gender assumptions, they're not going to hold up in court.
Not anymore. Okay. So we've talked about the Equal Pay Act claim, the Title VII claims. Now, what about Reuben Grundy? He brought the claim of race discrimination.
Right. Under Section 1981.
Under Section 1981. Why wasn't he successful? Especially given that the court found sex discrimination in the case, you would think maybe those things would go hand in hand.
That's a good point. You might assume, well, if there's discrimination happening in one area,
right,
there might be evidence of it in another. But the real difference here is what you need to prove under Section 1981.
Okay, so a different standard of proof.
A different standard.
Yeah.
For Mr. Grundy to be successful, he had to show that Pacific Telephone had a discriminatory intent.
Okay.
You know, they were intentionally acting against him because of his race.
Okay.
Or that there were these systemic barriers in place specifically because of race that were really hindering his opportunities.
Got it.
And the court ultimately found that he just didn't have enough evidence to meet that burden.
Okay, so even though they found issues with sex discrimination, the bar is different for race discrimination in this case.
Exactly. Different laws, different elements, different evidence.
Okay. Now, after the court found Pacific Telephone liable for discrimination against Chapman and Cochran.
Right.
What happened next?
Yeah. What were the remedies?
Yeah. What did they actually get?
Well, in Chapman and Cochran's cases, the main remedy was back pay.
Okay. Back pay.
Yeah. So this covered the period from when they were initially denied promotion back in 1974.
Okay.
All the way up to when they were finally promoted in July of 78.
Oh, wow.
So they were compensated for all of those lost years.
Right. So they're being put in the position they would have been in financially.
Exactly. If the discrimination hadn't happened.
Makes sense.
And then in addition to that, as is pretty standard in successful Title VII cases, the court also awarded attorney's fees.
Okay, so they didn't have to pay for their lawyer out of pocket.
Right, which is so important.
Yeah, because those fees can add up.
Absolutely. It helps make sure that people who've been discriminated against, they can actually afford to hire a lawyer and fight for their rights.
That's huge, a big barrier removed. Okay, so taking a step back, looking at the bigger picture here, what's the lasting importance of Chapman v. Pacific Telephone?
Yeah, what makes it a classic?
Yeah, what are those key takeaways?
Well, it really drives home a few critical points, even today. First, as we talked about, the Equal Pay Act. It's all about the substance of the job,
Yeah, not the label.
not the fancy title.
Right.
Second, under Title VII, employers, they have a real responsibility to be able to justify their promotion decisions
Right.
with legitimate, non-discriminatory
That's
reasons.
just, I have a feeling.
Exactly. Feelings aren't facts.
Facts, evidence.
And third, I think this case shows us just how fact-specific discrimination claims are.
Okay.
What happens in one case doesn't automatically mean the same thing will happen in another case.
Okay, so it's all about those specific details.
Each case turns on its own set of evidence.
Okay. And it seems like the Equal Pay Act and Title VII, even though they're both about fairness in the workplace,
Right.
they kind of come at it from different angles.
They do. They have different focuses.
Can you kind of break that down for our listener?
Sure. The Equal Pay Act, it's very specific. It asks, are men and women being paid the same for doing jobs that require substantially equal skill, effort, responsibility, working conditions, all of that?
Okay, very specific.
Very specific. Title VII, it's much broader.
Okay.
It prohibits discrimination based on all sorts of things: race, color, religion, sex, national origin.
Okay, a much broader umbrella.
In all aspects of employment, not just pay.
Right, hiring, firing, the whole thing.
The whole thing.
And you mentioned earlier the idea of statistical evidence.
Right.
It seemed like in this case, those big picture numbers, they weren't enough on their own.
No, they weren't enough to prove those individual acts of discrimination for all the plaintiffs.
Okay.
While the court did look at the statistical evidence, they said, look, this general underrepresentation of women in management, for example, that's not enough to prove that each individual woman was denied a promotion because of her sex.
So they needed something more concrete.
More direct evidence, something linking the company's practices to the specific decisions made about those individual women.
Okay, so for Chapman and Cochran, it was that lack of explanation.
Exactly. That served as that direct evidence.
Okay, that makes sense.
Different standards of proof.
Right, different standards for different situations.
Yeah.
Now, are there any other quotes that really jumped out at you from this case?
Oh, yeah, there are a bunch.
Any that you think really capture the court's thinking?
I think so. Regarding the Equal Pay Act, the court said very clearly, actual job content, not job titles or descriptions, which is controlling.
Okay, there it is again.
That sums it up perfectly.
And
And in explaining why the Equal Pay Act claims didn't succeed, they said, plaintiffs have failed to establish a prima facie case of substantial equality of the two positions.
so they didn't meet that burden of proof.
Exactly. And then when it came to the Title VII claims that were unsuccessful for most of the women, the court said, broad generalizations drawn from job titles, classifications, or divisions, and conclusory assertions of sex discrimination cannot suffice to establish a prima facie case.
Okay, so they needed more than just those broad generalizations.
They needed those specifics. And then finally, and this is really key for Chapman and Cochran's success, the court pointed out that Pacific offered no explanation for its failure to consider Chapman for promotion during the period from 1973, when she became qualified for second-level management, until 1976.
Okay, no explanation.
And similarly for Cochran, Pacific offered no explanation for its apparent failure to consider Cochran for promotion during the period from June 1974, when she had been found qualified for second-level management, until 1976.
So those specific dates, that lack of explanation, that was crucial.
Absolutely.
All right, so just to kind of wrap things up, what was the final outcome in Chapman v. Pacific Telephone?
Okay, so the court concluded that Pacific Telephone did violate Title VII
Okay.
by discriminating against Judy Chapman and Joan Cochran because of their sex when it came to promotions,
All right.
but they didn't find a violation of the Equal Pay Act.
Okay.
All the other claims, including Reuben Grundy's claim of race discrimination and the Title VII claims of the other women,
Right.
those were all dismissed.
So, mixed bag, but a win for Chapman and Cochran.
Exactly.
So what are the kind of big takeaways for our listener?
What should they remember from this case?
Yeah, what should they walk away with?
All right, here's what we learned. When we're looking at Equal Pay Act issues, employers have got to look closely at those job responsibilities.
Yeah, actual work being done.
It's not just about the title. Under Title VII, especially with promotions, employers need to have those documented, legitimate reasons for their decisions.
Right, they've got to have the evidence to back it up.
And for employees, if you think you've experienced discrimination, you need that detailed job-specific evidence to support your claim.
Not just a feeling, not just statistics.
The specifics matter.
Okay, so really important lessons here, even though this case is from 1978.
Absolutely. The principles still hold up.
They do. So as we wrap up our deep dive on Chapman v. Pacific Telephone, here's something for everyone to consider.
Okay.
This case really stressed looking at actual job content, not just titles. But in today's world, things are changing so fast.
Oh, yeah, constantly changing.
We got remote work, project-based roles, new industries popping up all the time.
How do we keep up?
Yeah, how do we even figure out what the actual job content is? How do we make sure people are getting paid fairly and everyone has equal opportunities?
It's a great question.
Yeah, what kind of evidence would we even need in this new world?
Something to think about.
Definitely something to think about. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Absolutely.
We'll see you next time.